Blog Talk Radio.
This week on Wrestling Night in America, we're going to go over our top five list of biggest news stories of 2022. And later on, we're going to talk to you and predict what will happen in 2023. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you two men, and they ponder the question, should old acquaintance be forgotten, never brought to mind? Hoffman and the Greg!
Indeed, if it's Sunday, it is Wrestling Night America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for January 1st, 2023, and a Happy New Year's to all. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and our intro for longtime listeners of my audio shows will recognize that as the dulcet tones of one Kurt Hoffman, who joins me today as my co-host, a longtime collaborator of mine, producer of Gonzo and the Greg, which was my first audio show on PWTorch.com. You can find that show, actually, in the archives. If Kurt did not scare you away with that intro, you can actually go into the archives if you're a VIP member of PWTorch.com and check out Gonzo and the Greg. Kurt, a pleasure to have you along once again, sir.
Greg, I am many things, but dulcet is not one of them. thanks as always for bringing me back. And, hopefully a handful of you people might have remembered that intro. It's been a few years. I was kind of glad I maybe semi-still got it. Yeah. So, another top five list, Greg. I'm all in.
Yeah, the top five list was our bread and butter on Gonzo and the Greg, and so we're going to bring that back tonight because it is a New Year's Day edition of Wrestling Night in America. It feels appropriate to recap 2022 here. We also have, we're sticking to the theme of this show, though. This show is all about the big shows in professional wrestling, so we're going to go over with you the Wrestle Kingdom event that is set to take place, at least night one is set to take place later on this week in just a few days, January 4th. They'll have another day of it on January 21st, but we'll run down that card as well. But, here we are, Kurt, 2023, and 2022 was a heck of a year in professional wrestling. Just a wild and woolly year. It's going to be hard for 2023 to top it for sheer newsworthiness. I think the top two stories we're going to have in common, but 3, 4, and 5, we may share some, but I think they'll be a little different in terms of where we put them. What do you think?
2022 had like 5 years worth of wrestling stories smashed into one. I can't catch my breath. When I was looking back at the news events that happened throughout the year, I'm like, wait, that happened this year? Oh, my God. Like, the honorable mentions would have easily made a normal top five list of newsworthy stories that have happened in the year. But, yeah, it's been insane. And there's absolutely no way this year could top that, I don't think.
I don't think so either. But then again, stranger things have happened. So if you want to get on the phones, 515-605-9345, we'd love to hear what you think of our top five list as well as any predictions you might have for 2023. You can also email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Kurt, let's start. Let's get to it. Let's go to number five, and I'd love to hear your number five. The fifth most newsworthy story in professional wrestling in 2022.
Yes, as I said, I would agree with you that number one and number two are probably going to be very similar. But for number five, I had to take a couple of minutes, and I decided to come up with the purchasing of Ring of Honor when it was a company that was just about ready to go down. And Tony Khan has swept through and rescued it, if you will, and is trying to find a way to fully resurrect it, but at least have been able to carry the titles over and hire on a bunch of the wrestlers, and is able to have events. But I figured Resurrection of a what could have been a dying company, I feel should make my list.
And not only that, but it was the probably, I mean, you could make the argument the number three-ish promotion in the United States. I mean, you could argue Impact. You could argue maybe even New Japan. But I think ROH was right there. So certainly, I mean, you know, you talk about how some years your honorable mentions could be part of the top five. I think some years this could be number one. I mean, you're basically your number two company, professional wrestling in the United States, buying the number three company. I mean, it's not really AEW. It's Tony Khan buying ROH, but basically it's the same thing. And yes, I did have this on my list. It was higher than number five, but I did have it on my list as well. What did you think, Kurt? It's been a while since we talked, so we had a lot of ground to cover. A lot of these news stories are going to kind of sprout up in my mind questions I want to ask you from the past year, because we haven't had you on to talk some of this big stuff. Tony Khan buying ROH and the way he's utilized ROH on AEW TV has drawn a lot of criticism in 2022. Do you side with those who criticize Khan, or do you kind of understand what he was trying to do in keeping the ROH name alive and trying to find an outlet to air the show?
I feel that, geez, I mean, I can kind of see both sides of the coin, which is not a very entertaining stance on things, but I mean,
that's usually
he did
the stance I take, Kurt. There can only be one of us here on this show that waffles like that.
Well, we should just be so happy that Gonzo is not on here, because he would be, yep, there it is again. What a schmo.
For sure.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, he's trying to keep the name alive. I get it. He's also desperately trying to find a way to keep the name alive and transfer it, hopefully, into his own entity on whatever network or app or what have you. But at the same time, there's a price to pay by doing that, by overexposing it, perhaps, on your own company while you're still trying to, pump up your own company. I feel this probably could have been easier if AEW, has been around for more than 5 years, a very well-established company, but I feel maybe more of the time should still be, put into AEW, because it's still a growing company.
That's an incredibly hot take to say that AEW television should be focused on AEW wrestlers. I'm scorching from that take.
I know. Hey, get out your pen there, Greg. Get writing. All right, I got a hot story for you. So,
no, I mean, look, yeah, I agree. Like, it was too much. It was just too much because it would be one thing if AEW's roster was so thin that they kind of needed ROH to sort of pad things out, but their roster is overflowing. And so you've got some talented AEW contracted wrestlers sitting on the sidelines while the Gates of Agony are wrestling in the main event on Rampage. I mean, like, I couldn't understand it.
Right. Meanwhile, they got all this YouTube time. You couldn't dedicate, some of that to your new Ring of Honor. I feel like there's more different ways that this could have been handled than what we have witnessed.
For sure. Yeah, it was weekly frustration here on Wrestling Night in America from fans trying to wrap their arms around what Tony Khan was trying to do with the ROH brand and with AEW. And I don't think there's a good answer, unfortunately. And, you mentioned the YouTube shows, and I get that, but that's not going to give ROH the wide audience that Tony Khan was seeking to try to sell, and so it had to be on TNT or TBS on Dynamite or Rampage, and then you got that, and the other thing was AEW with so many title belts, and then you're bringing the ROH titles and you're defending them on television or on Battle of the Belts, and it was just too much. It was not good, and I think television to a certain extent has improved since the last pay-per-view. And since, Tony announced that ROH would be going weekly on Honor Club and that we wouldn't be seeing it on AEW TV as much. You know, Samoa Joe, the King of Television, is still around, but they've gotten rid of a lot of some of the lesser stuff, and I think that's helped. So what did you make of the ROH TV deal being announced as Honor Club for $9.99 a month?
It's hard to call that a victory, really. I know that's not what he's probably intending on doing. With the news that, you know, or the fanfare that Ring of Honor has been generating, I don't know if telling the people, like, okay, so now if you want to see it, you got to pay. That might leave a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be an experiment, and I think you're right. Tony Khan would have certainly preferred having it on linear television somewhere, on cable or something like that, but it's not a buyer's market, I guess, for television and for professional wrestling. And even with the success of AEW, you know, he could have tried to sell that as, hey, I'm the guy who has succeeded in a way that nobody has in the last 20 years in giving genuine competition to WWE. You know, he walks in with that background and still can't get a TV deal for ROH. I think that speaks to perhaps how ROH is seen by television executives and also the television landscape as we go into 2023.
Yeah. It's just it seems like the message is to all you Ring of Honor fans that want just to continue, I'm sorry, this is the best I could do. It almost seems like now a punishment that you must now open up your wallet.
Yeah, I know. It's and I think the thing is, we're in an era where people are paying so much for streaming services anyway. You know, there's one philosophy in thinking of it that, like, what's one more? But on the other hand, it's at what point, where's the saturation point for fans, especially wrestling fans? You know, what's the saturation point for them? You know, they've got Peacock to get WWE. They've got, you know, their Fight TV or whatever to get Bleacher Report. I'm sorry, to get AEW. You know, they've got, you know, maybe YouTube TV or Sling TV to watch the weekly shows. And then how many of them are going to want to shell out more to keep up with ROH? I don't know. We probably won't know those numbers. Those numbers probably will not be released publicly. But the nice thing about it is Tony Khan can run ROH shows on Honor Club. He can use those shows as sort of a pilot to continue to knock on doors with the television networks. And if they get a TV deal, say, with, I don't know, Nickelodeon, for example, you know, they can pull it off Honor Club and go right to TV. You know, you'd have to have something on Honor Club to offer fans, you know, to make up for not having the TV on there. But being on Honor Club and with Tony Khan running Honor Club allows him to move TV from that to a major network if they do end up getting a TV deal at some point. So it still allows him to shop around, but it also gives ROH their own home. It separates them from AEW, and it allows them to run shows on their own so that Tony Khan can say, this is the production values you can count on, this is the kind of atmosphere you can count on for ROH standalone shows, and he can take those to networks and try to sell it that way.
Oh, please, God, I hope Ring of Honor goes to Nickelodeon.
Well, I mean, that was the first network that popped into my head. I mean, you know, they've done a fantastic job with the NFL games. They've done a fantastic job with the NFL games. So
this is true. It's very newsworthy, too. Yeah, I just want to see Ian Riccaboni get slimed. I think that would be outstanding.
I think Ian Riccaboni would consent to a sliming if it meant ROH could be on cable TV. I do think that.
Team player.
All right, my number five is Sasha Banks and Naomi walking out of WWE. The reason it is so low on the list, such as it is we've seen Sasha Banks before take long hiatuses, disagreements with creative, injuries. So her absence, even as she was a well-pushed wrestler, you know, it's not the first time she's gone off TV. Naomi, you know, she was not as big of a star within WWE as Sasha Banks. I think she had the potential to be, but it just never seemed like they were going to get behind her it with a serious push. And, you know, the reason I do have it on the list as number five is these are two big name stars to walk out on Vince McMahon and WWE, bigger names in a long time, and not come back as of January 1st, 2023. So newsworthy. And I think the fact that it's women doing it is also newsworthy. You know, women have crept closer to equality within WWE over the last several years. But we've seen, you know, the Steve Austins and we've seen the Brock Lesnars walk out, the male top figures walk out. We haven't really seen it with the women. And I think this shows what kind of power the women have in WWE that they can feel empowered enough to walk out and still have options outside of WWE. Sasha Banks in Japan right now, expected to be a part of the New Japan Wrestle Kingdom show. You know, there's potential for Sasha Banks outside of wrestling that she's dabbling in as well. So just going to show that, you know, the women will have options just like some of the men outside of WWE, and hopefully that opens some eyes within WWE. I know it was only a short time later that Vince stepped down, but I have Banks and Naomi walking out as my number five.
And I have them walking out as my number four. To me, this is the story about wrestlers starting to get fed up with the direction that they're taking and the way it's getting written and booked and whatnot. This is like the writing on the wall before what we'll be eventually getting to later on this list, I do believe. And, I'm pretty sure they're going to find their way outside WWE and they're going to show everybody, like, you know, this is not the end all be all. And we're proving it right now. I mean, Sasha Banks is a bit player on The Mandalorian. She gave Boba Fett a freaking tornado DDT, for Christ's sake. You know, I think she's going to be just fine. And Naomi, should we look into her hanging out with Jade Cargill that one time? They had a picture together in one of their Instagrams and whatnot. I think that might mean something.
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know. It may come up in my predictions. So who knows?
Oh, yes. So, yeah, it's just... It's not so much about, you know, like, okay, they were bigger stars before than where they're at right now. But this is more or less, to me, just the message of the WWE structure crumbling when wrestlers are now standing up for themselves. And they're not going to wait until they have a mass firing. They're like, okay, I don't like where I'm going with this, so I'm going to show you that you're not the end-all be-all.
And let me be clear, that's not something that everybody can do. You know, I mean, Banks is unique in that she had options outside of WWE. Naomi, we haven't really seen her do much outside of WWE yet. So you got to have a backup plan. And so it may be not even in the professional wrestling world. It may not be jumping to another company. It may be doing something else. And, you know, I think that Banks and Naomi playing hardball, maybe they never expected to walk out, but maybe they figured, you know, they had to just to so that, you know, Vince didn't call their bluff or something like that, you know. But it is the power that the top stars have in professional wrestling. And it was shown here, Banks was a top star in WWE. You know, there's a certain hierarchy amongst the women with Becky Lynch and Bianca and Charlotte. And I have to imagine that Sasha Banks was kind of the odd one out there in a tag team. Yeah, she had the tag titles, but historically the women's tag titles haven't meant a lot in WWE. So she's looking at a lot of the women that came in around the time that she did, the Charlottes and, you know, even Ronda Rousey, who she could look at and say, you know, she hasn't earned it the way I have in this company, scratching and clawing for everything. She comes in and yeah, she was a big star in UFC, but she's getting opportunities handed to her now that I would love to have. And, you know, it's all speculation, of course, but you can understand where Sasha's frustration would come in when she sees the Beckys and the Charlottes of the world, you know, each atop a separate brand. And here she is with the tag titles.
Right. And I do hope that sometime later today, speaking of Ronda Rousey, we get to discuss the ultra bizarre nature of what transpired on Friday.
Oh, yes. We can remind me to mention that later on in the show, because that is Charlotte Flair, you know, it's one of those things that it happens with her more often than anyone else, it seems like. But anyway, so Banks and Naomi was your number four. My number four is Cody Rhodes returning back home, and I say home sort of facetiously, to WWE. He was the big star, the big WrestleMania moment that he had against Seth Rollins, and then facing Rollins in Hell in a Cell with a bruised body, basically a torn pectoral muscle, and just the audible gasp of the crowd when he took off his jacket to fight in that match, and the respect that he no doubt earned. You know, I'm sure he already had tons of respect from the locker room, but also, you know, just on top of that, for going through that match. I mean, that's being talked about as a match of the year candidate here at the end of the year. So Cody's return to WWE short-lived because of that injury, but I would expect 2023, we hear about him possibly in the Royal Rumble. I'm sure he's going to have a major match at WrestleMania and a date with Roman Reigns at some point in this calendar year.
Yeah, this is actually my number three. What a huge shocker when he – the whole story actually is the huge shocker of him just leaving AEW when he, you know, had so much control and power and he decided to give it up with a reality show and everything and just shows up out of nowhere at WrestleMania. And and I think, you know, he took a gamble, a really weird one, but I feel like it's paying off because – that WrestleMania reaction was incredible, and I'm sure if he does show up at the Rumble, that reaction will also be incredible. And the timing also with what we'll eventually be talking about with the hands switching, I feel like he's going to be the centerpiece going forward here throughout the year. And yeah, he couldn't have picked a better time to make this move.
Look, nobody believes in Cody Rhodes more than Cody Rhodes. And I don't believe – I don't mean that negatively. I don't mean that he's got a huge ego or anything. But he took a big gamble, you know, leaving WWE to begin with, took a big gamble being a part of the startup of AEW, being an executive vice president there. And then, I mean, he could have had that job and, you know, wrestled five more years, retired, kept his EVP position, worked backstage – you know, maybe took over some booking duties from Tony Khan at some point, but he bet on himself again to go to WWE, to a place where he never really felt like he was seen as the top star that he believed he could be. And, you know, he went to WWE as now a proven commodity in AEW, but there was still risk because WWE was paying him a lot of money, but how would Vince book him? Like, how would he do without maybe all the control that he had over his character in AEW? So he took a big risk going back to WWE as well. Bet on himself doing that, got a big contract from WWE for that. And I think, you know, there had to be some butterflies. There had to be some nervousness about it. But when he goes out at WrestleMania, gets the big reaction, has the kind of match he had with Seth Rollins, I'm sure that was the point where he's like, okay, everything's going to be fine. Like, this is going to go well. So, yeah, it's just, and I think the reason I have it so high at number four is it's an EVP from AEW. I mean, that's a big deal. And secondly, it was the biggest to date, the biggest name from AEW to move to WWE. We've seen numerous WWE stars move from WWE to AEW. But Cody was really the first shot fired by WWE to acquire a big-name AEW talent, even though, I mean, it's not a homegrown talent because he was in WWE before, but I think that meant a lot for WWE and maybe some of its fans to see that this talent is not talent going back and forth is not a one-way street.
I mean, yeah, there was Cody Rhodes in WWE, but there was not an American Nightmare Cody Rhodes in WWE, which I think is
why... There was Dashing Cody Rhodes.
Oh, I miss him so much.
I miss the theme song. That's about all.
Yeah. but, yeah, this is the full entire package of Cody Rhodes that he's developed in the indies and the whole circuit that he's refined in AEW. He fully formed, and the theme song too. That's what blew my mind when that theme song kicked on. I'm like, this is not a WWE theme song at all. And here it is at WrestleMania, and the roof is blowing off this place because this is about as AEW accurate of a Cody Rhodes that you were going to see in a WWE ring. I mean, you can go to your local collector store, and you could probably find the Cody Rhodes figure wearing the WrestleMania outfit in an AEW packaging. Like, this whole thing is so bizarre, which is why I put mine, you know, up on the number three spot.
Yeah, you know, Vince McMahon notorious for taking characters created by other companies and giving them a completely different character. I mean, the list goes on and on as the wrestlers who have had to be re-gimmicked by Vince to take away what made them popular in other companies. And here is Cody Rhodes, as you said, AEW Cody Rhodes in WWE. And I'm sure he negotiated that. I'm sure that was not just something Vince threw in because he loved the character and he didn't want to touch it. I'm sure that was something Cody said, look, I want to come in with this character. I want to come in with this theme music. And Vince acquiesced. That was a big deal. I think you're right about that.
And I guess this is where I was saying my number three, which I already did. So I guess it's your number three.
I didn't know if you had it. I don't know if he had anything else on that. My number three was Tony Khan buys ROH. And, I kind of talked about it earlier, but the reason I have this higher up than you do maybe is because I put a lot of stock into it being, the third biggest company in the United States being purchased by the owner of the second biggest company. I mean, you think about the level of a news story that was Vince McMahon buying WCW. And it's a notch below that because it's not number one buying number two. It's number two buying number three. But still, I think it has the reverberations that are similar in some ways in terms of the talent, where does it go, what does it do, and things like that. So that's my number three. Kurt, your number two.
My number two, which is probably your number two, I'm guessing, is we'll just say CM Punk. And I think you can just fill in the whole story. Yeah, you can fill in the whole damn thing yourself. Talk about crazy and bizarre watching this thing unfold. I mean, I didn't see that live because it probably happened at like 2 a.m. in Eastern time.
I was doing this show while it was going on, and people were calling in saying, "Yeah, I love the show." By the way, did you hear about what's going on at this post show presser? And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm kind of following it on Twitter." And then, of course, like later on in the night, it's like, "Oh, by the way, there's also this backstage brawl that's happening." So it was a pretty wild time to be hosting this show after an AEW pay per view.
Geez, they'd be cutting in live like Tom Brokaw. Wrestling Night in America. Fight breaks out backstage. More at 11.
CM Punk gave quite an interview with Tony Khan at the post press conference. There's a brawl now going backstage. I used to do a good Brokaw. I don't know if that was as good as I could do, but it's just hard to get. It's hard to get the Brokaw voice. Saying words like CM Punk. That's just very weird. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, double down on your Brokaw, all right? going back to when I first heard the CM Punk got signed, I looked over at a friend of mine and I said, there's no way in hell that this is going to go well in the future. Because
really?
CM Punk, he never gets along with everybody. He always has a problem with somebody. Now I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, there's a lot of cooks in that kitchen right now. He has to at least have a problem with the Bucks. He has to. And sure enough, yes, them among some others. I didn't think it would end like this, though. Holy God, I did not think there's going to be chair shots and fisticuffs a galore, along with his poor dog being caught in the middle of the damn thing. Yeah. Didn't predict that one.
Poor Larry.
Yes, poor Larry.
I think there were a lot of people who thought the same thing as you that thought, well, this will probably end in fireworks at some point. But I don't think people anticipated how public it would be and how truly Punk would just burn everything to the ground and salt the earth behind it. Like, you know, and people are talking about, well, they're referring to CM Punk. There's references of CM Punk on AEW TV. Somebody's, you know, the Bucks are teasing his finisher, and so people are saying, you know, is this? I'm just like you never say never in wrestling, but it's just so hard to imagine. First of all, Punk being back in that locker room, but also that locker room being accepting of Punk with the things he said, not just about the Bucks and Omega, but Adam Page and other guys like that. I mean, you know, that he's a pretty respected guy in that AEW locker room. So it's just there's a lot of conversations that would have to take place before that happens.
If this is a work, I'll probably go out on a limb and say it might be the greatest work I've ever heard of for wrestling. But you got to look at what they would have to go through in order to make this happen. People legit got smacked around hard. You saw the marks.
I'm not saying it's a work. I'm saying that for Punk to return all of this, like, you know, the real life stuff, for him to return, and people are saying, you know, could he be returning because of these references that are being made to him? And I just think I feel like there's a lot that Punk would have to do to make amends. And I don't feel like Punk is the kind of guy who does those sort of things, you know?
No. Two words you will never hear him say, and that is, I'm sorry. You're not going to hear him say that. He's not going to come to the table and talk peace with the Bucks and Omega. That's never going to happen. No way. he didn't, like you're talking about a pipe bomb, he detonated a nuke in that press conference when he said that the Young Bucks couldn't manage a target, let alone a wrestling company. I'm like, that's some irredeemable stuff right there. There's no way that he could just come back and go back to work with them. No way.
Yeah. I mean, there's always the idea of, can you set aside your personal differences to make a ton of money? And at what point does it become too personal that you just can't do it, that you can't set aside, no matter how much money you could potentially make, it's not worth, you know, your own ego and putting everything aside, because wrestlers have egos, believe it or not. And, you know, the Bucks and Omega and Punk could make a lot of money, but they'd also have to do a lot of backtracking and the Bucks and Omega accepting Punk after what happened and Punk, you know, kind of, I won't say groveling, but like after all he said to appear back in AEW, you know, he'd be taking a lot of those things he said back. So it's just, it would take a lot, I think, is what I'll say for that to happen. I wouldn't put money on it. It's not one of my predictions for 2023, let me say that. But where do you come down before we move on to number one? Because this is my number two as well, I guess I'll just say it. Where do you come down on – because a lot of the debate has been around who was right, who was wrong. And I think most reasonable people have settled on, well, they're both wrong in certain regards. Like nobody comes out of this situation smelling like roses. You got Omega, who's saying all this nasty stuff. You got the Bucks, who go to as executive vice presidents, who go and get physical with someone who works under them, which historically in any walk of life is a no-no. Who do you think is more to blame for how the situation got so out of control? Was it Punk or the Bucks faction?
Who is wronger?
Basically, I mean, really.
Yeah. Okay, let's break it down here. So we got to go all the way back to when Hangman, quote unquote, went into business for himself in that promo.
Yeah.
You could start with him. Or they might say, well, he did that because of something that we have not seen or heard of backstage that CM Punk might have done. So maybe start with him doing that. I don't know. But it's just a step-by-step process of wrong decision after wrong decision by everybody each step of the way. I think the ultimate of wrong, though, would probably hit, like what really ignited this baby and made it the number two on our list instead of like a number five is when CM Punk publicly exploded on everybody and he outed Colt Cabana with like a whole bunch of inside baseball that nobody was really happy that he put forth out in public. He dressed down their ability to lead in the company. He dressed down the company itself. He said, "I'm old, I'm tired, and I work with bleeping children." He just rattled as much cage as possible. And that was actually, you know, on-camera public documentation. Everything else after that, the big fight, that's a lot of he said, she said, that they were trying to suss out left and right. So I guess the winner of the Ultimate of Wrong would have to be CM Punk, only because, you know, we saw it happen. You know, if you throw the challenge flag in the NFL and the referees can't see visual proof of it, then you got to go back to the original call.
Love the reference there. And I tend to agree. I both factions are at fault. You know, the Bucks and Omega too, for letting it get to this point. You know, there should have been some attempt to smooth things over, you know, before this ever got to this point. But I think ultimately Punk taking exception to a shot that Adam Page took on TV that people forgot about a week later. Like, I mean, that just shows how much this stuff festers with this guy, that he would explode partially because of that. At least the references to Adam Page. So yeah, I think, you know, you go back to the fight, and yes, the Young Bucks were at fault. Yes, they should not have, as executive vice presidents, gotten to that point. But that never would have happened if Punk's outburst at the post-show presser never happened. So the best thing you can say from this is hopefully all parties learn from this. Hopefully the Bucks and Omega as executive vice presidents learn from this, and maybe their communication with the roster improves and things like that. And maybe, you know, Tony Khan will learn something from this as to how to better manage people. Because I think that's one thing that people have criticized Tony for, is maybe he's not the greatest manager of people. And I think that was on display with Punk publicly excoriating his EVPs while Tony Khan is sitting next to him. Like, that's how little respect Punk had for Tony Khan, his boss. That's number two. Anything else you want to add before we go to number one?
Well, like you said, Tony Khan was sitting right there. And if you want to go back and talk about what would it take for CM Punk to come back to AEW, Tony Khan would have to be a part of that formula, and he is definitely not going to be in that formula because his boss to worker relationship is not good, i.e. ghosting people and letting them out of the contract and not even like talking to them after they get released. All sorts of these stories I hear. So more proof as to how I think there's no way in hell CM Punk's coming back to AEW.
All right, moving on to number one, which, of course, we both have. It's the 24/7
title. Yes, that's Chris Jericho losing to Action Andretti.
We're both going to make the same joke, but with different examples.
Shit. I'm sorry. What was yours?
I was going to say the WWE retiring the 24/7 title.
Oh, I should have let you do it, damn it. I'm sorry.
All right, Kurt, let's give us the real number one.
Oh, that would be this little thing that happened where, you know, the god of professional wrestling just stepped down off his throne. So news that I never thought I would live to see happen has happened. And
is that because you thought Vince would outlive you, or that Vince would die as owner and chairman?
So he's a cybernetic or living organism, much like the Terminator. It's just like a cyber skeleton with living organic tissue. And Vince McMahon lives off of just, you know, dumbbell exercises and eating steak wraps. And he will outlive everybody. But he won't be outliving everybody as the head. I mean, he still has, you know, ownership in the company, but he won't be, like, I don't know, the president or I don't know what type of...
Decision maker, anyway.
Decision maker, the shot caller. And the fact that it went to Triple H, which... There's a whole underneath section of this that were my honorable mentions were involving Stephanie McMahon just suddenly leaving the company, Shane McMahon getting tossed out of the company, Triple H getting demoted in the company. I feel all of this was just a step-by-step account leading to this number one. Which has even nothing to do with how Vince McMahon left the company. It was all these accusations and allegations. Like, the whole thing would make it an incredible book, Greg. And I remember you used to write books. How about if you do another one?
It is crazy. This was also my number one, Vince Steps Down. It's crazy to think about those moments with Triple H and Stephanie, who seem to be on the outs, you know, Triple H's vision for NXT being completely uprooted, all of his wrestlers basically being jobbed out on the main roster or released. And then lo and behold, there's a leak about these allegations. And who gets put back in charge? Stephanie and Triple H. It's just weird the way the whole thing worked. You know, if this was a television drama, you'd say Triple H and Stephanie were somehow behind Vince getting taken down a peg. But there's no proof of that, and, you know, all we have are the coincidences. But, man, it really makes you wonder because, you know, what would their roles be if Vince were still in charge? I don't know. Yeah, this is one of those things where the pieces of wrestling news where I will always remember where I was when I heard this news. And I remember I was scrolling through Twitter at a stoplight, and I saw Vince's tweet. And I click on it, and I make sure it's verified. This was before everybody was getting verified. You know, this is when Twitter was still legitimate, I think, as a social media news source. You know, you saw the blue check mark, and you're like, that's Vince. Is this? Am I reading this right? And then you kind of like wait a second. You give time for other people to tweet who have seen that, and you know you scroll and you're like, well, other people are reacting to it, so it must be real. But it's like, I just can't wait to get home to like read up what people are saying about this. But yeah,
at this point, all the cars are honking behind you.
Right. I mean, do you remember where you were when you heard that?
Yeah, I was at my cubicle at work. Actually, it was my friend Phil that messaged me about it.
Phil, former guest star of Gonzo and the Greg back in the day?
Yes. Wait, he was? Wow. Yeah, I guess that wasn't one episode. I guess he did. But yeah. Yeah, him of all people. He hardly watches wrestling, but that news traveled so fast and violently that he wound up being the one messaging me. And then I had to go look, you know, do some Googling of my own. And oh boy, I was shocked and amazed at how the timing of this. You want to, like, going back to Sasha Banks and Naomi leaving was like the picture of the problems that were developing, and you can all kind of just boil it down to one individual responsible for all this crumbling and demise that's happening inside this former glorious company, and now that guy's not in charge anymore. You want to talk about fortuitous. Oh my goodness, you would think they actually had good writers writing this thing instead of the guys over at Stanford.
Surprised that, speaking of Sasha and Naomi, that they haven't returned now that Vince is out, because he seemed to be the biggest barrier to them doing what they wanted to do and to them being happy in WWE. Are you surprised that Triple H, notorious for ironing out differences, hell, he brought back Bruno Sammartino into the WWE fold. Are you surprised they haven't returned since Vince left?
I am very shocked, because another one of my honorable mentions was the return of all of these other past people that got released or got destroyed coming up from NXT and being given better, bigger chances. I would have thought that those two were a layup to come back because of this program that's been going on, but that's not the case. And it's such a real head-scratcher, too. I mean, Sasha Banks has decided to go to Japan. I mean, I don't know how much money they're giving her, but you think it would just be easier to just go back to WWE. Such a bizarre move.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the product that WWE has put on? I know you don't watch the weekly shows necessarily, but I mean, you're up to date on what's going on, clearly. Do you think the product has improved drastically? Has it improved minimally? Has it not improved at all? What's your take on the product post-Vince as we go into 2023?
Started off, the changes were so notable. You would feel like it was such a huge change. But then somehow over time, it's weird. It feels like it's on pause. And everything is just repeating itself over and over again. and you're not really getting much change that you thought you were going to be getting. And now I heard that Triple H, I think himself, said, all right, this is going to be a slow burn. And I thought I heard a rumor where they were estimating maybe around summertime where we were going to finally get to Triple H's official vision. But, geez, they got to hurry it up because I'm starting to lose interest in Raw. I still like SmackDown, though. There's a lot of stuff on SmackDown I like. I think it's all about Raw. They just got to really spice that thing up somehow.
It's just so hard in 3 hours.
This is very true. That's probably what Triple H is saying, too. Like, look, guys, come on. We got to do something about the three-hour business. But, yeah, I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, I don't know what he's got planned, but I'm hoping it's going to happen. Maybe he's just waiting on all the pieces to come back into place, you know, like Cody coming back. He's a big star attraction that he can write around. But sometimes I feel like Vince McMahon's still there because I'm here on SmackDown. You know, somebody on SmackDown last Friday said that they were, you know, want to get, I think it was Braun Strowman, says he wants his title opportunity against Gunther. And I'm just like, you don't have to say that anymore. Why'd you say that? Oh, no. Is he back? Is he telling him he's going to, oh, no. So, yeah.
And then you hear.
I'm just.
And then you hear Michael Cole giving condolences to the family of Don West, and you're like, that never would have happened under Vince.
This is also very true. Yes, when that caught me off guard. I didn't even know that news story until I heard it on SmackDown, actually. That was pretty sad. Yeah. But it was bizarre. They're still going back and forth. Here's a lot of new stuff. Here's a lot of stuff you would never hear on WWE. But then here's also the same stuff you've always heard on WWE.
Yeah. Yes, it's been weird what they've embraced and what they haven't in terms of change. Do you think Vince ever comes back to WWE at some point in any form? Maybe not as Booker, but in some way, does he ever come back to WWE with any kind of power or as an on-screen figure or anything like that?
It'll start off as a laptop, and it'll eventually be revealed to be Vince McMahon. I mean,
oh, gosh.
Yeah, the quoting you from earlier, wrestling is a never say never type thing. It's very possible, maybe 3 years from now, or at least till all this stuff really settles over, and maybe he might make a surprise appearance and, you know, lead on a storyline a little. Give him some type of fun little title, like he's the general doer-sayer guy of this show, and, you know, have him come out and welcome people. So, yeah, I don't think we'll never see him again in the WWE show.
Wow. Yeah, it's that was the biggest news story probably in wrestling of my lifetime. So it was made for a pretty easy number one. And I think it's interesting with all the crazy things that have gone on this year that we have the same five in our top five, different order, but same five. So that's interesting. Honorable mentions, I only have one for people who've listened to Gonzo and the Greg before. Some people like to do lots of honorable mentions. Some people don't like to do any or only a few. The only honorable mention I have, and I had it as an honorable mention because I think there's still a lot unknown about the situation, is MJF briefly walking out of AEW. Not sure what all was a work, what all was a shoot in that scenario, but obviously it turned into an on-screen storyline. So I included that as an honorable mention just because I wasn't sure. We're still not really sure what all was real and what all wasn't of that situation. But, Kurt, I know you have some honorable mentions as well.
Yeah, I thought about the MJF situation, and I don't know. I more or less just went with my gut instinct, and I feel that it was mostly a work. I thought it was pretty effective, though, because it made a lot of news. But I feel it's like 90% work, and they might have based it off of something that they had in the past, and I don't know. But that's just my gut instinct. I could be completely wrong on this a year from now. And they're like, no, that was a shoot. He just straight up just dropped F-bombs on Dynamite and stormed off. For real. Oh, well, I'm wrong. But getting to my honorable mentions list, pull back my phone here.
I guess we'll know for sure if he ends up in WWE in 2024 like he keeps bragging about.
Yes. Although that's the truth. There will be a bidding war in 24. Oh yes, there will. So yeah. How about Ric Flair's last match?
Yeah.
Like that happened this year, you know, 2022.
Alleged last match. It's not the last match until it, you know, unfortunately we get to a point where, you know, he really can't wrestle again. But, yeah, we've had Ric Flair's last match before is all I'm saying.
Right, right. And, yeah, for Ric Flair, there's only one real way out of wrestling. But, I mean, did you actually watch that thing? Did you actually watch his last match?
I did not.
It's going to be really hard for people to want him to have another match after that match. Like,
yeah.
I thought I was going to legitimately see his last match during that match.
Yeah, I think that's why I didn't. Like, I didn't really – and it's not that I thought the man was going to drop dead in the match. I didn't really think that was going to happen. But I also was conflicted about supporting that kind of thing for a guy that age and in that condition. So I felt a little icky if you know, thinking about watching it. And I was like, I can't do it.
Right, right, right. I would agree. Let's see. Steve Austin having an impromptu match at WrestleMania after not wrestling for a very, very long time.
Would have been easy
top
three probably in most years.
Right. It's Stone Cold Steve Austin, and he's wrestling at WrestleMania. When was the last time you said that sentence? But no,
he
it got
was,
bumped
he
off.
He was kind of like... He was kind of like the white whale. I mean, he was like the last one of that generation who, you know, Shawn Michaels came back and all this kind of stuff. And Austin was the guy who was like, nope, he's not coming back. He's not coming back. He's not coming back. And then he comes back. So, I mean, that is a big deal.
And I'm hearing he might come back again, maybe.
Possibility.
Yeah. Jeez, that's wild stuff. How about Regal? In the situation that he's in where he was able to get out of AEW and come back to WWE, albeit in a backstage capacity for a year. But that was something I never thought was going to happen.
Yep.
Yeah,
I mean, when Triple H took over and got power, I think there was always the belief because Regal was so instrumental in what he did in NXT, there was always the belief that even if it took his AEW contract expiring, that eventually he'd go back to WWE, but I think the surprise was how quickly it came together.
Right, yeah. The other ones I mentioned before was Shane and Stephanie's departure. Mentioning Triple H bringing back people.
Shane's story is bizarre.
Yeah. That was from the Royal Rumble, where Vince McMahon was not pleased with how he conducted himself backstage.
Yeah. Jeez.
And I put this on here. Did this happen this year? Now, maybe I think about it. Maybe it happened last year, December, outside the bubble. But when the unfortunate injury of Big E, was that this year?
I think that was this year, March 11th.
Okay. Oh, well, March. Okay. Yeah, as I said, he was a very unfortunate mishap that happened. And he was a very big star on SmackDown to have something like that happen. He's still not back yet. Which I figured got my honorable mention. And that's all.
Awesome. Right. Well, that's our top five list for the top stories of 2022. We thank those of you who are holding online staying with us here. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Greg Parks and Kurt Hoffman here on Wrestling Night in America on New Year's Day. So Happy New Year's to those of you who celebrate, but we'll go to the phones and be prepared to give us a prediction you have for 2023, because that's how we're going to close out tonight's show. So we'll be asking all of our callers to provide us with at least one prediction for the new year. And we start as we usually do with Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to the show. What's your first question for us tonight?
My first question is on the Sami Zayn Bloodline storyline. In the Royal Rumble match itself, if Sami Zayn and the Bloodline are in the Rumble, do you think it's more likely that Sami eliminates a Bloodline member first, say even by accident, or the Bloodline take out Sami Zayn first just to make sure he doesn't pull a fast one on him?
I think the more likely thing at this point is that Sami accidentally eliminates one of them. And that's with the caveat that there's still, what, 4 weeks to go before the Rumble. So a lot can happen between now and then. We just saw John Cena and Kevin Owens defeating Sami and Roman Reigns on SmackDown this past week. There are going to be reverberations within the Bloodline from that. And Sami Zayn was the one who got pinned. So things are moving in this storyline. So by the time we get to the Rumble, they may be in a different position to call something else happening in the Rumble. But, you know, I almost put for an honorable mention, Kurt, the continued dominance of Roman Reigns within WWE. What do you think of this Sami Bloodline story on SmackDown? I know you said you really enjoyed SmackDown. I have a feeling that this storyline is part and parcel for it.
It's my favorite storyline of all wrestling to date. It's so good. Riveting, deep, there's layers to it. If this is a hint of signs to of what's yet to come, I'm very excited. It's just like Sami Zayn is just center attraction. I love it. It's been stuff I've been hoping for this guy for years. You want to hear a shocking prediction? What if Sami Zayn accidentally won the Royal Rumble and has the shot against Roman Reigns?
I mean, there's a lot of people, The Rock, Cody Rhodes, a lot of big names being bandied about as possible Royal Rumble winners to have Sami Zayn win. I mean, but, yeah, I feel like Sami would kind of give up that choice. Like, he wouldn't
– well,
he would forfeit his opportunity to face Roman
Reigns,
don't you think?
How about this, though? So Sami Zayn accidentally wins, and he's standing there befuddled in the ring. Then Roman Reigns comes out and just beats the crap out of him with an injury angle, or he's out for so long that they actually had to temporarily relinquish his number one contendership to somebody else, and then have Sami Zayn come back later on.
Yeah, I think there's so many ways. This is the most fun storyline to speculate on because there are so many ways it could go. And, you know, that's part of the fun of following wrestling is actually enjoying things and talking about all the exciting ways they could go. And even if you're wrong, at least for the Bloodline storyline, they've still gone in a direction that's entertaining and makes sense. And that's really all we ask for. We're not hard to please as wrestling fans. It's just we've been fed so much crap over the years that it just makes it seem like we complain about everything. But we'll go back to Ryan for his second question for us tonight.
Second question is on this Fire Slap League that's debuting in a couple weeks. Say if AEW was to do a competition like this, do you think Daniel Bryan would be the odds-on favorite to win in the Federation, or do you think there's someone else that would be the Fire Slap champion in AEW?
I have no idea. With Bryan's history of concussions, I wouldn't want him getting slapped in the face. I would try to limit that. But maybe that's just me. Kurt, have you seen the ads for Dana White's Power Slap?
Oh, yes. I never thought this. Oh, my God. It is so entertaining. At first, I was laughing about this. I'm like, what? This is the thing? This is real? And then I watched the sizzle package for it, the sizzle reel, and I'm like, I am in. I am all in. Oh, my God, I am all in. I never thought that slapping a grown man in the face could be that brutal. But, yeah, you can legit knock somebody out with a slap to the face, and Daniel Bryan should not be getting knocked out like that.
Going out on a limb there, yes. So, Kurt, who would then be the Power Slap champion of AEW?
Wardlow.
Really? I don't know about that. I would think someone like Samoa Joe, maybe, or even like.
Are we talking about like for real, or are we talking like a storyline?
Yeah, for real. No, for real.
So you don't think Warlow couldn't spin some guy's head backwards from one slap? Look at the size of that guy. Granted, though, Cesaro's got some crazy tendon strength in him. I think he could probably wind back a good slap. Cesaro might be a fun one.
Yeah, those are the two names that come to mind for me. Like, put Gunther in there. I mean, WWE, I don't know if anyone would beat Gunther.
I will never challenge Gunther to a slap fight, ever.
Well, let's hope it doesn't come to that, Kurt.
I feel that's how he warms up before he does his dumbbell rows.
Ryan, your third question for us tonight.
Yeah, final question I have for you is, went to a live event last week involving a steel cage, and I never knew that the referees, they sort of have to, like, position the cage to the ground when it's coming out of the ceiling. It looks like it's all pretty awkwardly. This time around, the fans are went, ooh. So my question is, has, like, a referee or any of the security people that are trying to position the cage ever been, like, injured, like, lost a finger or, like, gotten a dislocated finger from trying to, fix this cage up?
If they have, I certainly have not heard tell of it. And you got different kinds of cages depending on what promotion you're running too. So the cages are different, and maybe the process to get them in position is different too. I'm not sure exactly how an independent promotion, what their cage would be like as compared to, say, WWE or AEW's cages, and how much time and effort it would take to get them into position. But Ryan, before we let you go, I'd like to get a prediction for you for 2023. Any prediction at all in professional wrestling for 2023? Do you have one for us?
I predict Jessica Carr will finally do one match this year based on what she's doing with Sami Zayn, beating him up, and even saw this year that Natalya even challenged her to a match, and maybe that's a match we'll get for this new year, is Natalya and Jessica Carr, if she's already calling her out. It was a number of
interesting prediction.
But
yeah. I saw it at the house show where she hit a stunner on Sami Zayn, too. Ryan, thank you for calling in, and thank you for your prediction. Have a happy new year.
Happy new year.
Thank you. Jessica Carr, former wrestler, now referee in WWE, getting back in the mix. I think that's interesting. I think that's very interesting. Kurt, we'll save our predictions for before we sign off. I've got DJ from Miami on hold. He's going to give us his prediction when he calls in as well. But before we go to DJ, I want to talk briefly about Wrestle Kingdom 17, January 4th and January 21st. Here is the card for the 4th. It's Yuji Nagata, Kojima, and let me get the card here. Yuji Nagata, Satoshi Kojima, and Togo Makabe versus Tatsumi Fujinami, Minoru Suzuki, and Tiger Mask in an Antonio Inoki Memorial 6-man tag match. TJP and Francesco Akira versus Lee Yo, which is Leo Rush and Yo, for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship. Kairi versus Tam Nakano for the IWGP Women's Championship, FTR against Hirooki Goto and Yoshihashi for the IWGP Tag Titles, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Ren Narita in the tournament final for the inaugural NJPW World TV Championship, Carl Anderson versus Tama Tonga in a singles match for the Never Openweight Championship, Great Muda, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and Shota Umino versus L.I.J., Naito, Sonata, and Bushi in a six-man tag in Muto's last NJPW match. Taiji Ishimori versus El Desperado versus Hiromu Takahashi versus Master Wato in a four-way for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. Will Ospreay versus Kenny Omega for the IWGP U.S. Championship. And Jay White versus Kazuchika Okada for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. So that is night one, which is expected to last about 7 hours based on that card. But night one, I'm sure we'll get a night two card after this develops. We've got AEW wrestlers in Kenny Omega. We've got WWE wrestler in Carl Anderson on a New Japan card. So we'll see if this makes it to one of the top stories of 2023 when we're sitting here at the end of December, or early January at the end of next year, talking about the biggest news stories of 2023, because theoretically, Kurt, this should be a pretty big deal.
Yeah, and not to mention, FTR represents Ring of Honor, right? So you have wrestlers from every single company in Wrestle Kingdom. Every company is represented. That is pretty wild. It's definitely going to be making a list of some sort down the road, but I mean, who knows? Who knows? Look at the crystal balls. What craziness could be developing in the year of 2023.
I know. Now, Kurt, when we got together the other night back in New York when I was up visiting family, we got together over a few beers. We both opened and closed a brewery. I didn't know if that was possible, but we managed to do it.
We shut the whole place down. Woo!
But it came up in our conversation that you kind of cooled on New Japan. And I found that interesting because I remember a time where watching New Japan is kind of what tethered you to wrestling. I mean, you kind of left WWE behind a little bit, and New Japan was really keeping you in the wrestling scene. So tell me about what's happened with your love affair with New Japan over the last several months.
Right, yeah. I mean, I've been watching New Japan for, geez, it feels like 5 years or something like that. We'll just say, you know, around the apex of Kenny Omega, the Bucks, Bullet Club, Cody, et cetera, et cetera. Over the time when all those guys left and AEW formed, I don't know. It felt like New Japan to me, and also it's very unfortunate the pandemic definitely had a heavy hand in, you know, what the trials and tribulations they had to deal with. But over that course of time, it's just, I don't know, it felt very rinse and repeat to me. It felt stagnant. And also, I don't know, the way the styles and matches are going, I feel like New Japan's starting to turn into a Walmart. You know, it's just copy-paste, same spots, like you see on the States. Like, okay, here's the guy coming off the ropes. All right, now you five people all huddle up together. And yeah, I'm just starting to see a lot of the same stuff I see on typical TV over in New Japan. Now, the allure to it for me, it was a very different culture over there, very different. And that got me very interested because it was a truly an alternate product to watch. And they honed their craft so well in doing so. But again, maybe I'm just too used to it now, or maybe the spots that I see in New Japan have also been leaking over to the, you know, especially to AEW, where they're all doing Suzuki spots left and right. So now I see it like three times a week before I even see New Japan. But I'm hoping that Wrestle Kingdom ignites my passion back into New Japan because I truly do like New Japan, and I'm begging for them to win me back.
Yeah, we'll definitely be talking about the results here on Wrestling Night in America next Sunday night. Any matches from this card really have you fired up? Have you excited about checking out this show?
Omega and Ospreay are going to explode the internet. Like this match is going to be out of this world, straight up.
Yeah.
I didn't even know FTR was on the card. I just heard that now, and I'm super excited because I love FTR, as do many
yeah.
people. Yeah, geez, so many matches you mentioned. Kairi Sane, I love her work a lot. I'm looking forward to the women's match. This is going to be a pretty good night.
And that's not something we're used to seeing on New Japan shows.
Right, that blew my mind, too, when I found out that, you know, women are wrestling in New Japan now, and I applaud that, by the way. That's awesome. That's
yeah.
always the one weird thing I couldn't get when I was watching New Japan at the beginning of my watching. And I'm like, why isn't there women's wrestling? This is weird. They literally only have, like, two women in the company and they're managers. This is so bizarre. But now we got women's wrestling. Now, I've seen some highlights of it on Facebook. And, yeah, they can go. They're really good. And
yeah.
I just can't wait to see how they do at Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah, I think just seeing how Carl Anderson and what he does as a WWE wrestler on a New Japan show, just seeing how that unfolds, I think is interesting to me. Seeing Muta, who I actually saw live several years ago down here when TNA had a pay-per-view, I think it was Lockdown, and they had it at the University of Miami, and I drove over across the state to watch, and Muta was on that show. You know, this is his last New Japan match, so it'll be fun to see him one last time there. Ospreay and Omega, certainly contender for match of the night, as you mentioned. But also just to see how some of these matches build to the second night, January 21st. They've done usually nights back-to-back, sort of what WrestleMania has started doing now, but there's going to be a long lead time in between these two now. So just to see what they do to sort of build to the second night, I think, is going to be something interesting for me to watch. Let's go back to the phones. DJ from Miami is up. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's on your mind?
Hi, guys. The first thing I saw on, I guess, like a rumor was they're making a new belt. I'm not sure if it's the Raw belt or it's just going to be maybe the heavyweight championship. They're going to put both belts together. I'm not sure. But going into that, I see that the Judgment Day might be going to SmackDown. So if that's possible, hopefully Roman will get a girl on his side, because if Cody's going to win this belt, he's going to need Brandy in his corner. So I feel like maybe that if this is possible, that something's going to happen, because they can't just have certain things happen with, you know, no consequences, because this guy's holding the belts for, I don't know, 500 days or whatever it is, and it's getting crazy already with nobody on Raw having a belt. So going into that, do you guys think that this big fashion thing is going to keep going, or do you think that at the end of the day, Roman's just going to take a little vacation and there's going to be one belt?
Well, I had heard the belt rumor. I don't know how legitimate it is of WWE introducing another belt. I'm for fewer belts, the better. So I would not really be in support of that necessarily. Especially for someone like Cody Rhodes, who doesn't really need one. And if you want to give him a belt, have him beat Roman Reigns. Like, somebody's got to beat him at some point. Build Cody up to for him to be the guy to do it. Doesn't sound like Brandy. It's the last interview I saw with her, she was kind of done with the in-ring stuff. So I'd be surprised if they brought her back to do anything with Cody in terms of being physical. So I don't know then that Roman Reigns would necessarily need a female member of that group. Although there are some options there. Judgment Day to SmackDown, I don't know. You know, Ray moved to SmackDown to be away from Judgment Day. I think it would be weird for them to move SmackDown, or move Judgment Day, and Dominik and Rhea Ripley right back over there, which wouldn't make a lot of sense to me, but I guess it's possible. Kurt, your take on any of that?
As for the belt rumor, it got blown way out of proportion. It was actually Triple H going to Men's Warehouse. He needed to get a new belt. That's all that really
of course,
was.
Of course.
Yeah, I know. You know how these things go. But, I mean, a new belt, unifying the belts, I guess that could make sense. Or maybe they're just trying to make a more unique-looking separate championship for, you know, like Raw, perhaps. I was thinking Roman Reigns was going to lose both those belts throughout the year, and I thought that they were going to split them up. And then Cody would probably have one, and who knows, would have the other. Not Sami Zayn.
I don't know why you would make an entirely new belt when you have two belts on Roman. Just get one of them off of him. Like, he doesn't even have to lose, you know, necessarily to lose one of the belts. So I don't know why you wouldn't just do that.
Oh, no, because, well, it's how the trend goes, really. Whenever somebody gets crowned a new championship, like, 9 times out of 10, it's usually, like, a new champion, and then they, like, give them a brand-new title the next night on Raw.
Well, no, physically, yes, I get it, but Roman literally has two titles. He's got the WWE title, and he's got the Universal Championship. So, like, instead of creating a whole new title, which I think is what the argument is, not just a new belt, but an entirely new title, I would just get one of them off Roman and somehow, and that can be your other title. Go back to how it was.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I see what you mean. Yeah. That makes sense. 'Cause Raw needs to have, you know, the one person that has the one belt above everybody. And it should be something that's, you know, not a brand new title. It should be something that still has some type of lineage that you can date back. And, yeah, I would agree. You should split those belts up this year.
DJ, back to you for your second question or comment for us.
My second thing is going into EAW, I don't know where they're headed and what they're doing, but I don't know if you guys are getting hit, but they're kind of going a little ECW-ish to me, like cutting the hair, using hammers. Like, it's so weird. Like, they're doing this three-way match 7 times. You know how much cool stuff they could be doing compared to, like, fighting all over the arena, getting crazy stuff, Jericho carrying a bat with, you know, stuff around it. Like, this is a little, you know, I don't know. He said this is a wrestling company, not a street fighting company. It's so weird. Like, I don't know if you guys feel that way or not, but it's kind of like getting, you know, weird because, like, to me, it's like, I don't know if they want to be too edgy. Like, I don't know if you guys caught Rick Ross said the MF-er on live mic and nobody said anything, nobody cared. It's just like, are they trying to be edgy or are they trying to be a real wrestling company? I don't know. What do you guys think at the end of the day? Like, this new year coming up, do you think that this guy needs help or is he just going to keep on going off the rails and he's going to lose his TV promotion and blah, blah, blah?
I don't think that's going to happen. Look, the wrestling promotions of yore, you look at the NWA, what were they known for? They were known for blood. Some of their biggest angles were just beat downs and you know, Dusty Rhodes getting his arm broken in a car door and stuff like that. And we all consider that real professional wrestling. So AEW is not doing anything different than the forefathers did. You know, WWE is not the only promotion out there. So while they're PG, there are still other companies that came before the NWA and all the other promotions, the regional promotions. They all did blood often. So, you know, that's Tony Khan kind of hearkening back to yesteryear. But I also think that if you want to differentiate yourself from WWE, and Eric Bischoff gave this famous story when he started Nitro of, like, he took a legal pad and he wrote down everything that WWE was about and every way he could be different about that on the other side. And Tony Khan kind of doing the same thing here. WWE is PG. They don't do swearing. They don't do blood. They don't do, you know, they don't do violence in certain ways. Let's do that. Let's do that to set ourselves apart because you can't beat WWE or you can't, you know, gain new fans by doing the same thing WWE is doing. That's just not going to work. So I understand what Tony Khan is doing. Does he overdo it? Probably sometimes. But I don't think the best of seven match with the Lucha Brothers and the Elite is an example of it. I think the brawl all over the arena, it was a way to set that match apart. If you're doing seven matches, you want to do seven different matches. And I think they've done a really nice job so far of making each match different and setting each match apart from the other. So I think that's part of the reason they did that. Kurt, AEW, are they going too far down the violence lane for your taste? Or do you think they're just doing what wrestling companies previous to WWE's PG edict have done?
Right, I don't think there's really too far. I mean, I don't know. Then again, having a guy getting a pizza gutter put to his head side by
your television network is always going to rein you in, right? Tony Khan is not going to do anything that Turner does not want him to do. That contract is too important to AEW for him to be like doing things that TNT or TBS do not approve of. So, you know, put that out there too.
True. I think there's two halves to it. I mean, one is Tony Khan trying to be anti-WWE in terms of presentation and being different than what they are, you know, trying to be the other side of the coin. But there's another half to it. He's having a hard time trying to rein this in and control it. The whole Rick Ross F-bomb thing, I guarantee you that was not by design. I think he just blurted it out and just not give a damn. And stuff like that's going to get him in trouble. Like, yeah, you can go crazy, but you got to go TBS crazy. You can't go Showtime crazy or HBO crazy.
Yeah.
And Tony Khan, he's going to have to step it up and then, like, really take control and tell people, look, you cannot do it like this. You have to do it like this.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I agree. It's all going to come down to Tony Khan and what kind of leadership he can show in those situations. DJ, your third and final question or comment for us tonight.
I just want to comment real fast on that real quick. I just feel like they can do less violence because there's so many guys who they claim, quote-unquote, they're great wrestlers, but how are they going to do it? They all have hammers and throwing hammers and, you know what I'm saying? Like, come on, give them a chance to real wrestle in general. You know what I'm saying? I think that will prove that they're wrestlers and they can move on to more up-and-coming
well,
things.
Well, I mean, it's not like they use the hammer the entire match. It's used in the finishing sequence.
No. I mean all of them in general, the whole company. You know what I mean? Like,
Last
Warlow and all this other nonsense. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, that's all. My last question is, I don't know if you guys really noticed, but I hate this internet thing with this wrestler thing. It's just like the podcast, like Jericho's thing is like, oh, the next day he's going into detail that about the match and, you know, all the behind the scenes. That's not, you know, I don't like that. I like the old style, like, you know, that nobody knows what's going on or, you know, somebody's
you
a real heel or, you know what I'm saying? What do you guys think that this media is just getting worse? And I mean, guys are fighting online, calling each other F-bombs, and this is all on Twitter. It's like, dude, you can't be in DMs. You have to do this on live media. It's like, I feel like media is really killing wrestling, and this is, like, getting a little out of hand. Like, what do you guys think at the end of the day? Like, Jericho is, like, telling backstage stuff and about the matches and is really, you know, going at it on Twitter. I mean, I feel like, do you think, like, in general, these guys,
well,
like, because the media getting a little crazy, do you think they should sign, like, hey, you can have a media, but it can only say hi to fans and not your own media. Keep that with your family and blah, blah, blah. What do you guys think at the end of the day?
I don't know if you can do that if these guys are independent contractors. I don't know how much control you can have over their social media. But, look, I mean, with the Jericho stuff on his podcast, I mean, if you don't like what he talks about, don't listen. I mean, that's the easy solution. Like, if you don't like him, you know, pulling back the curtain too far, don't listen. I mean, if you don't like wrestlers going at it on Twitter, getting personal, don't follow them. I know sometimes it's hard when people retweet and stuff like that, but it's hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube when you've given wrestlers or anybody this level of freedom and this level of, you know, ability to air their dirty laundry. And they do it, it's hard to put that back in the bottle and say, okay, you've done this for so long, now we're going to say you can't do it.
Especially stuff like this gives them the majority of their popularity, and for some people,
get some notice.
Capital, yeah, money. Sadly, you can't take it back, you can't go backwards. It's just things have, I don't know, I wouldn't say evolved, things have changed to this, and this is the world that we're in now. I mean, Greg, you say, you know, if you don't like what he says, don't listen. I don't listen, but I'm still hearing about it. Like, it somehow still finds me. You know, what they're doing now, though, it seems like they're just getting ahead of the story. I mean, they look at us right now. We're doing a show where we're talking about the business. They can do that too. Like, they're getting ahead of that, and they're telling their own narrative because they know that, you know, stuff like this exists that's talking about it. So to them, it's fair game. It's a fair for trying to protect the business, you know, and trying to create the illusion of storylines or conflicts. Yeah, it's harmful, but that's just the world that we're in now, where everybody knows what's going on, and everybody wants to know what's going on. And if you don't want to know what's going on, too bad, you now know what's going on.
Yeah. And I think to what you were saying, too, about getting their own story out, like, rather than have Dave Meltzer and Wade Keller try to, you know, use backstage sources about what's going on, somebody's going to come around and say, hey, this is the deal. So you hear it straight from the horse's mouth. So there's no, like, you know, gossip, and there's no secondhand sourcing and stuff like that. They're going to come out and tell you what happened. So, you know, I think there's an advantage to that, but I totally understand it killing the aura of pro wrestling a little bit for some people. I get that, but I just it's hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube at this point. DJ, before we let you go, give us one prediction for 2023.
Can I add one more thing, though, to the what we're saying? Like, just in general, with Mandy thing, right? Okay, and then, like the Rusev's wife thing. They're making all this money, but in general, do you think – when they hit 45, what do you think they're going to – so it's like, what are they going to do, crawl back to WWE after the money runs out? I mean
– well, that's why they're making all the money they can now.
But that's what I'm saying in general. Like, this is hurting them. Like, I feel like if this never would have came around, OnlyFans and all this crap, they would have been wrestlers what they became, not somebody who's a sex fan. It's just – you know what I'm saying? It's just
I'm fine with them making money. I'm fine with them making money their own way and doing it on their own terms and not having to be a quote-unquote independent contractor when the company owns and tells them everything to do. So if they want that and the freedom to not abuse their body and instead, you know, save their body and save their bump card, more power to them. You know, that's their right to do that. So I can't say – no, you should be putting your body on the line taking bumps instead of earning money in an easier way and probably earning more money doing it that way. I would never tell somebody that. DJ, your prediction for us.
My prediction is I just hope Tony Khan really sits down with somebody and listens. You know, his company is going to be up and coming, and I hope that Triple H really does his thing, you know, compared to listening to Vince, you know, do it his way. You know, he keeps on talking about the old way. We'll bring it back the old way. Just don't keep on talking about it, you know what I'm saying? Keep on saying when he was, you know, up and coming, he was, you know, he listened to the business and to his heart, and that's how he got big, and that's what he should do now compared to listening to Vince. You know what I'm saying?
All right, DJ, thanks for the phone call.
Yeah. Talk to you soon.
Not sure that was really a prediction from DJ, but more of a hope for 2023. And why not? We're all about hope here on Wrestling Night in America. Let's go to our last phone call of the evening, then we'll give our predictions, and we'll say sayonara for another week. This, I believe, is Jeremy from Tampa.
Yes, how you doing, guys? Hey, I just wanted to say Happy New Year to all of you.
Thank you.
Two quick things.
Happy New Year.
The first thing. I mean, Mike's my best friend, DJ, and I have to get – hey, I disagree. I believe in the podcast. As a 45-year-old, I want to know more about the business and behind-the-scenes stuff. I'm not 13 or 12 years old anymore. Then my prediction is – out for 23, I think WWE should bring a new version of the Four Horsemen back with Ric Flair as the manager and being like a James Dillon.
Interesting.
Oh, here we go, Greg. Pick him. Who is it?
Oh, gosh. Oh, I'd have to have a little more lead time to pick before I
give
my
answer. You have 5 seconds.
No, I can't do that. Jeremy, anything else for us tonight?
Oh, no, guys. Hey, I enjoy your show, and DJ, I'm coming for you soon, so I'll catch up with you fellas later.
All right, thank you, Jeremy.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Hey, love you guys. Later, bye.
Happy New Year.
I don't listen to a lot of wrestling podcasts just because I don't have the time. I know, Kurt, there was a time where you were able to listen to a lot of podcasts while you do your job. I'm not sure if that's the same anymore, but... I guess I'm agnostic to this whole debate about, because I just don't listen to podcasts, but what's your take on, you know, so many wrestlers having podcasts, and I think at some point it's more like disinformation than anything else, like your Bruce Prichards and your Eric Bischoffs who just go out there and they either don't remember or they give some kind of answer that is easily fact-checked is wrong, and it's like you're just putting more bad information out into the atmosphere. So hard for me to say. What's your take on it?
Yeah, there's a lot of wrestling podcasts out there from wrestlers. Like, there's just way too much. You have to really pick and choose. In my current predicament at work, you know,
I do listen to podcasts. There's an ebb and flow to it, depending upon how the work is going. So I got to pick and choose what exactly I like to listen to a lot. And it's usually like maybe the top five of pro wrestler wrestling podcasts, you know, at least in terms of wanting to listen to pro wrestling content. It's so tough to just you can't listen to everything all at once. You got to pick and choose. And as you said, sometimes the stuff that you listen to might not be so true. Sometimes stuff might be incredibly true. I guess that's just the risk you got to take when, you know, you want to be informed, but you also want to be entertained. And you got to find, you know, who scratches that itch. There's nobody better than Greg Parks. Go for it.
Wow. Thank you. Massive compliment there. So Jeremy mentioned the Four Horsemen with Ric Flair. It's hard to see anybody but Cody Rhodes leading that group if it were to come to fruition. So he'd be my top. I don't know who else. Throw me some names as the guys you could see in that type of group. I'd say even like a Carmelo Hayes. I'd say Carmelo Hayes.
It's a great choice. Yeah, that's right. That's right. You got to think of NXT people as well. The pretty deadly guys. I mean, they're a little awkward and weird, but you know, they're a pretty solid tag team. I could see them.
Yeah, I just think they're too goofy in their current incarnation to be classic horse material.
Well, you could kind of tweak it a little, though. I think, you know, I don't know. Jeez, now you're putting me on the spot. But what about Steiner? Braun Breaker.
No, you had it right the first time. We'll allow you to call him that on here. Yeah, I just think I kind of see him on the main roster as a more of a lone wolf kind of guy, I think, whenever he gets there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's so I don't know how he'd fit with working in a group.
Oh, here we go. Graydon. What's that guy's name? Waller?
Grayson Waller?
Grayson Waller, yeah, not great. Grayson Waller.
I did think of him in passing. Yeah, he's a guy that I could see. I mean, I'd love to say a guy like Dolph Ziggler. You just don't know how much damage he's already, you know, has been done to him to where is it even worth it putting a guy like him in the group, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I thought about Bobby Roode, but I think Bobby Roode, I think he just had some back surgery or something not too long ago, so
yeah,
I don't know what type of condition he'll be in.
Yeah. So, yeah, those are some something interesting to chew on, I guess, for listeners. If you want to give your potential Four Horsemen with a Ric Flair-led group, find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. I'd love to hear your take on who would be in a new Four Horsemen in WWE led by Flair. Let's finish up with some rapid-fire predictions for 2023. I only have a couple. I'm not a prediction-type guy, I guess, but I felt like, you know, we did our look back with our news stories. We did need to do a look ahead as well. So a couple of predictions for me, Kurt. I have a big AEW star jumps to WWE. So following in the footsteps of Cody Rhodes, I think another big star, not just some mid-carder, but big star will jump to WWE. I think Triple H has made it a little more of a destination than it was under Vince McMahon in terms of WWE. And Sasha Banks, I think she wrestles in AEW somewhere along the way. I think if she was going to come back to WWE, she would have done it by now. Her going to Japan, potentially wrestling somewhere in Japan. We know that New Japan has a good relationship with AEW. It could even be on a second Forbidden Door show if they have another one in 2023 with New Japan and AEW with Sasha Banks on there. But those are two predictions that came to mind for me for 2023. Kurt, what do you think?
So you don't have a specific wrestler in mind that would jump over?
I don't because I don't know people's contract status. That's the only thing.
And that's one of my predictions. I also don't know much about how contract statuses work, but I was predicting that Matt Riddle will be All Elite this year.
Wow.
Given the problems that he's been developing. And I mean, I don't know how it works. Maybe he could get released and there's a 90-day no-compete or something like that. But I just feel that I feel that the problems are just starting with Matt Riddle and WWE management. I just have a feeling, and I think ultimately it's going to lead to Riddle jumping over to AEW. I also predict that Cody will be the world champion sometime this year. Maybe not WrestleMania. It could be like SummerSlam, perhaps. And I think the Sammy and Owens are going to be tag team champions this year as well.
Wow. Yeah, there is talk. I know people have thrown out Sammy's done such a good job. They want him to go against Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. But obviously, if WWE can get The Rock for that, Sammy's going to have to take a back seat. And that back seat might be Sammy and Kevin Owens against the Usos at WrestleMania. That's a match I've seen thrown out there.
That'd be a great match, too, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And speaking of great match, great show, Kurt. I think we did the legacy of Gonzo and the Greg proud tonight with this show in our top five list. So I appreciate you coming on. It was good to see you when I was up in New York and in the cold weather. Now I'm back down here and it's in the 80s where, you know, I feel a little better about that. But always fun to have you on. And maybe we can twist Gonzo's arm this summer when I come back up to New York to do a Gonzo and the Greg reunion show.
That would be outstanding. I hope by then Gonzo has a fully developed beard compared to that weird Paul Bunyan knockoff crap that he had going on at the brewery.
I feel like that's the best he can do. Like with his he's a redhead. I don't know, but
exactly.
You got to work on Gonzo and get him at least watching a little bit of wrestling. So if we do it this summer, that he'll at least know what he's talking about.
Right. And you know what? That's funny you mentioned that because, you know, after we met up with you guys, I drove Gonzo back to his place and we're having the Rumble Jackpot at his place coming up in a couple weeks.
Bittersweet.
So.
Bittersweet for me. So.
Right. So we're doing it. I'll try to shizzle on him. During the Rumble Jackpot.
When was the last time you guys have done it?
It's been a couple of years. We didn't do it last time. And, geez, I don't know if we did it at the time. Man, wow, it could be almost 3 years since we've done this thing. Wow, it's been a while.
Yeah.
It was all Gonzo's idea, though.
Oh, okay, good.
But it's all about the money for him, you know, so it's the only reason why he really loves it. Doing the jackpots, but you know what? Maybe we had a GoFundMe to get Gonzo to do one more Gonzo and the Greg this summer.
I'd say to harass him on Twitter, but he's hardly on Twitter, so I don't know. I don't know if that would work all that much. But Kurt, again, thank you so much for being here on New Year's Day and bringing in 2023 here on Wrestling Night in America.
Sir, it is always a pleasure, and thanks for bringing me out of my hole. I'm always welcome to come back if you need me.
Excellent. And thank you guys for listening. Hope to have a great 2023 here with The Torch and with Wrestling Night in America. If you're not a member of The Torch family, pwtorch.com/govip is where you can sign up. It's a great value for all your wrestling news and analysis. So you can find me on Twitter, again, at Greg M. Parks. And I'll talk to you next week. We'll talk New Japan and more, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.